Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Coming up around 12:20 today, we'll discuss the 111 formula that Women's World believes in so much. They not only put it on the cover of their new magazine, they say it is better than the lap band. And CBS News called the same formula, 111, developed by registered dietitian Rania Batenya, one of the 10 diet trends to watch for in 2014. Also coming up, we'll end today's show. In a recent study, more than 32% of respondents say they have a close family friend or family member who has trouble controlling their anger, and more than 1 in 10 admit they worry themselves about how angry they get. Yet more than 58% of those surveyed wouldn't know where to go for help. Well, today we'll end the show with licensed counsellor Nathaniel Smith, who specializes in anger management and domestic violence. His new workbook for individuals and groups is called Taming Your Temper, and we'll also be looking at nutritional value in anger management too. But first, let me introduce you to Jill West, the woman who said that the solution to childhood obesity may be found in one four-letter word, and that four-letter word is moms. Jill West is an accomplished speaker, author, registered dietitian. She's a certified health coach and a mother of three boys. And for more than 25 years, she's worked with thousands of individuals and families, working for several major hospitals, including University of California, San Francisco Medical Center and Joslin Diabetes Center, which is an affiliate of Harvard Medical School. And in preparation for writing her new book, she surveyed over 400 registered dietitians, also moms, to ask them what they feed their kids. And the book, appropriately enough, is called 400 Moms, Discover What 400 Nutrition Experts Feed Their Kids. Jill West, welcome.
Thank you, Vicki. Thank you for having me.
Well, I think this is an important topic. You know, we give a lot of lip service to childhood obesity in America, and not just America, it's expanding around the world now. But It seems not to be getting any better. Is it getting better from your perspective as a registered dietitian?
Well, I wouldn't say it's getting better. It has at least plateaued in the last 2 to 3 years. So I guess we call that progress, in that we were on such a trajectory of childhood obesity from the 1970s to 2010, where it had tripled, that to see it plateau is in some form progress, but still much, much more to do.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't have children myself, but I certainly see plenty of kids around, you know, stuffing their faces with supersized whatevers. And I was really intrigued. Your book is full of great information in here. And I thought, you know, for busy mom, busy parent, this must be a great help. Are you getting, what kind of feedback are you getting from people?
Yes, thank you for those comments. And exactly what you're saying, and that is that I really approached this from a what's simple and practical yet still healthy. And the feedback I'm getting from moms is exactly that there are many tips and strategies that they either haven't tried or need to try more frequently. And it's really come as a relief to moms that there are some simple strategies. You don't have to spend all day in the kitchen and you can still raise healthy kids.
Yeah, and I'm sure this book helped you somewhat, because a little bird told me that the question, Mom, what's for dinner, isn't exactly your favorite question either.
It is not music to my ears. I actually don't really enjoy cooking, which comes as a surprise to a lot of people. They make this assumption that as a registered dietitian, you must love to cook. And it's very important to me that my kids get healthy meals and healthy snacks. But that question invariably at 5:30, Mom, what's for dinner? And I have teenagers, and truly, they still ask me every day, Mom, what's for dinner? And, you know, the pressure around that when moms are tired and there are the after-school activities and the homework to be done is really a very big challenge, and I very much relate. So being able to provide quick and healthy ideas it was one of the questions I asked the 400 moms, what are five quick and healthy dinners you feed your kids? And want to venture a guess what the number one choice was?
Go ahead and tell me. I just saw that in the book, and I can't remember what it was. It pasta?
It was pasta.
Yeah.
Very good. Excellent. Which, you know, makes a lot of sense because it's quick and there are a lot of ways to fix it with meatballs, without, you know, tortellini, ravioli, all kinds of options. So it provides variety all in one choice. The one that really surprised me, though, was the number two choice, which was sandwiches.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah. It wasn't one I would have thought of.
Right. But obviously not filled with bologna.
Exactly. Well, and my number one tip for moms around the dinner meal is to visualize what I call the healthy plate. And so making half the plate fruits and vegetables and the other half grains and protein with a glass of milk. And so the sandwiches really work great for that because they're quick. So a turkey sandwich or turkey and cheese sandwich takes care of the protein and grains. And then putting some baby carrots and sliced apples and a glass of milk, very quick meal, far healthier than fast food, meets all those food groups. So yeah. Really a great choice.
Now, the book is not about making perfect choices. You do stress this throughout. It's making better choices. And, you know, unless a kid is raised with good choices from the get-go, it can be really hard to get them to turn around. So talk to us about how you recommend to people they work with their children to get them to want to eat better.
Absolutely. So first and foremost, I think it's important to focus on the healthy as opposed to good and bad foods, that we make these choices because they're healthy, whether that's around having vegetables on our plate or limiting the frequency of desserts or sodas and sweet drinks. It's all about being healthy, yet still having that balance. And I think the most important thing is that parents are role modeling that. So if they have fruits and vegetables on their plate, their kids are much more likely to eat them themselves. They're always watching, as we know. And so really modeling that and emphasizing this is what we do because it's healthy. You still may get some grumbling from kids, but I can tell you from experience and many, many moms telling me the same thing, that eventually kids will come around and see the benefits of it. It just sometimes takes a while and some patience.
Right, right. I couldn't help but think of my brother when I was reading your book, because as a kid, we had to have two or three veggies in every meal. That's the way we grew up. Everything was fresh. And he hated vegetables, and he would literally swallow Brussels sprouts whole because my mother would make him eat them. And so he's like, I'll get you. I'll just swallow them whole. But I like the way you've organized the book. It's broken down into the same four components throughout each chapter: basic nutritional information, then tips, strategies, kid-approved recipes, your take-home message, and then your game plan. So talk to us a little bit about the structure there and why you did it that way.
Yes. One of the ideas behind the book was, when I call it a go-to guide, I really look at it as a book where moms can move from chapter to chapter, jump around, that you really don't have to read the book cover to cover. So if dinners are the biggest challenge or breakfast is the biggest challenge, you can go straight to that chapter. And as you move through the books and the chapters, that format being consistent, I think, is really helpful for busy parents. Reading a chapter quickly, getting the most important information out of it and that bottom line, and then moving into, okay, now what's my next step? And that's really the game plan. We all can do a lot of reading, but we don't oftentimes take it to the next step of, mm-hmm. okay, what am I going to do differently in my household? And so this is trying to give moms and dads the opportunity to write down right in the book, here are the three things I'm going to try differently. Or maybe it's one or two. It doesn't have to be three. Because I really believe that those small changes and small steps over time can add up to very big improvements in kids' diets as well as the parents' diets.
Yeah. When I was reading reviews of the book, which were all glowing, by the way, one of the things that came up in several reviews I noticed was your BEST formula. I wonder if you'd share that with our listeners.
Absolutely. It's how I oftentimes will summarize the book. If you don't take anything else from the book, the most important thing is the best diet for kids, and that is B for breakfast every day. There's so much research about the importance of breakfast. E is for encouraging 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day for your children, and I emphasize the encourage because it's parents' job to provide the fruits and vegetables, and it's the child's job to decide what and how much to eat. The S is for stopping sweet drinks and soda, and T is to trim down on fast food and, if necessary, portions.
Very good. And so one of the things I want to ask you is about child abuse, because there's been a lot in the media lately about, you know, is it child abuse if kids are allowed to become obese? And oftentimes, parents are pretty obese themselves at the same time. But I wonder what you say to parents, because it's a delicate subject. Mm-hmm. How do you work with the parent? We talked about how we get the child to become more engaged in what they're eating, but how do you work with the parent to change that?
An excellent question, and childhood obesity is a very complex issue. I don't think there's one cause by any means, and I think by trying to help parents see just what a gift they're giving their children by helping to teach them what a healthy balance is, and again, that can involve the parents gradually making those changes with them. We all know change is difficult, and especially around food, and so starting with small changes and really emphasizing the gift of health that they're giving their children by helping reduce their chances of developing diabetes and high cholesterol and all of these medical problems that come with obesity, and also the gift of helping them succeed in school by providing healthy choices for them. All the studies show that kids that are well-nourished perform better academically, perform better in sports, have higher self-esteem. So it's really a gift they're giving their kids.
I would agree with you. I know a little girl who was very obese and eventually lost weight. You could not believe that was the same child. It brought tears to your eyes almost. How much
Absolutely.
She changed.
Yeah, it impacts every aspect of their life around friendships and academic performance, self-esteem. It really, really can be quite a positive gift.
One of the things I love about the book, there's several things I really like about this book.
Well,
but,
thank you.
But one of the things is that you actually take products off the shelves and rate them as worst cereals and best cereals, for example. And I was surprised to see how well Cheerios did. I've never eaten a Cheerio, but I hear about them all the time.
Yes, so I call those Jill's best picks and Jill's worst picks. And again, moms really very frequently talk about how helpful those lists are. It kind of becomes their grocery list. I now know with confidence that I can choose these cereals or these crackers or even these desserts and know that although dessert isn't healthy, this is a healthier choice that I can feel good about.
Right.
And so, yes, surprisingly, the 400 moms, the number one cereal they feed their kids is Cheerios. Now, you have to be a little bit careful with that because even Cheerios can run the gamut in terms of how healthy it is. And I use the guideline for cereals in particular of looking for cereals that have no more than 6 grams of sugar per serving. And so here again, if it doesn't appear on my particular list, a mom can always look at the cereal and see, oh, well, this one has 6 grams or 7 grams of sugar. I know that's pretty close to the goal. And so I do that with a lot of different products, crackers and snack bars and yogurts, about what is it you're looking for on that label to know that's a healthy choice. And I have kind of a reference guide in the back with all of those that's kind of a cheat sheet that a lot of parents like to use as well to be able to refer to frozen waffles or crackers and what's considered a healthy choice.
Right. And then what about snacks? I mean, come on, it's no good being a kid if you can't have snacks.
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, kids need snacks because their stomachs are not that big. And so the amount they eat at a meal really can't carry them over to the next meal. So to really get all the food groups they need for the day, they need snacks. They're really essential. And the number one snack the 400 moms provided was fruit. And I think that one sometimes gets missed. We get so caught up in the processed foods that are easy to grab like crackers and chips and even potentially cookies and snack bars. But if we can get, what I encourage moms to do is get two food groups, provide two fruit food groups as the snack. So something like fruit and a string cheese. That way you've got the fruit group and you've got the dairy or protein group, depending on how you want to classify it. Yogurt with some cereal on top. Again, you've got two food groups there. So snacks are definitely essential. It's being choosy about what those snacks are. And again, it's a great opportunity to help kids understand what is a healthy snack and how do I get those extra food groups in that I may have missed at a meal.
Yeah, well, I think this is a really valuable book for busy moms or maybe even grandparents or aunts who, you know, take care of kids a lot. Number one, lunch entree by those 400 moms, PB&J sandwich. That's something else I've never eaten.
Well, yeah, in some ways I was a little surprised at that too, but on the other hand, not at all. My boys have always eaten PB, sometimes just peanut butter, and sometimes PB&J. I have this story in the book about one of my three boys who literally took the same school lunch or same packed lunch every day when he was in second grade, and that was half of a peanut butter sandwich, no jelly, with dried mango, and then I could mix in some pretzels or different kinds of crackers, but literally the sandwich and the fruit had to be the same, and that was because the dried mango wouldn't get squished and he liked his peanut butter sandwich. And again, I've had moms say, what a relief to me to not have to worry about that same lunch. And I said, there are plenty of opportunities to add variety in at morning snack, afternoon snack, breakfast, and dinner. But I knew he was going to eat that lunch, so I knew he was getting refueled for the afternoon, and that was far more important to me and, quite frankly, far healthier than the school lunch that was being provided.
Right. Well, Jill West, I thank you so much for being with us today. The book is called 400 Moms Discover What 400 Nutrition Experts Feed Their Kids. A very quick final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with, Jill.
I think probably the most important one is try again. Keep trying. If your kids won't eat vegetables, keep trying, keep offering them. They'll oftentimes come around.
Great. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you can find out more about Jill at 400moms.com. The book again, 400 Moms Discover What 400 Nutrition Experts Feed Their Get Kids. And please do stay with us. We'll be right back. We'll be talking about the 1-1-1 diet, which Woman's World says is better than the lap band. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN!
More than 100 million wild animals are killed each year illegally. Poaching is a major threat to our country's wildlife. I'm Tom Barry. I'm an actor with a desire to preserve living space for wildlife. The Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust does just that. Works with private landowners to protect wildlife, to preserve natural habitats. To learn more or to work with the Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust, call 800-729-SAVE. That's 800-729-SAVE or visit wildlifelandtrust.org. Thank you.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, find out why Roberta Chinsky Matchison is known as the Talent Maximizer and how her techniques can help identify great talent for your business and how to showcase your own unique talents. Join us every Monday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m. and 98.9 HD Channel 3. See conversationslive.net for upcoming show details and podcasts.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Negativity and fear, two staples of talk radio. Well, we figured we'd try something different. Alternative Talk 1150.
And rocks and tandoori prawns and a box of chunks. Spaghetti with mussels, parma hams, and deep frozen waffles with syrup and jam. My willpower's gone, I'm down on my knees, praying to the god of cottage cheese. It's no good trying, I'll never beat it, cause if it moves, I'll eat it. So undo my trousers, let out the swag. Who cares, it's a snack attack, it's a snack attack.
Well, I love that music. Thank you, Eric. If you didn't guess, we are talking about healthy nutrition today. No fair playing that, though, because I'm really hungry this morning, Eric. I didn't eat dinner last night. Well, my next guest is known as America's eating strategist. Rania Bhatania has helped thousands of clients lose the weight they never thought they could lose. And in addition to her master's degree in public health nutrition from the University of Michigan School of Public Health, she's a Well Coaches certified health and wellness coach endorsed by the American College of Sports Medicine. She's frequently quoted in the media on health matters such as diet and weight loss, and works with clients nationwide through her national nutrition consulting firm, Essential Nutrition for You. Her new book is called The 111 Diet, and it is receiving rave reviews. The current Women's World magazine proclaims the 111 diet is better than the lap band, and CBS News called this ultra-simple plan one of 10 diet trends to watch in 2014, and the New York Post gave it an A-. Well done. Well, Rania, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Vicky. Thank you so much.
And I was talking to you a little before that we came live, and I like this book because it doesn't have any stupidity in there. I got deluged with diet books at the new year, and you know, I was looking through all of them, and some of them are so complex, and we do not need to make our lives any more complex.
No, dieters are, let me say this, chronic dieters are sick of dieting. And what's really appealing about the 111 diet is that, like you said, there's no funky food list. You can eat food that's in front of you. You can start at your next meal. It is common sense, and that's what the readers are saying. They are so happy to have this diet now. And what it is a simple formula where you eat one protein, one carbohydrate, and one fat at every meal and snack.
And that may sound a little too simple to some, so let's look at it a bit deeper. Let's talk about portion size for one thing, because we all know our portion sizes have got out of control, which is why we're having such weight issues. So if I'm looking at one portion of your protein, what would that be?
So a portion of protein would be anywhere from 4 to 6 ounces. And then if you're a little heavier, you could go from 6 to 8 ounces. So it's an absolutely normal portion. What happens on the 111 diet is that even if you're eating a little less than what you would normally eat, let's say on a serving of protein, you're complementing each meal and snack with carbohydrate and fat. So it's by balancing the meal in that manner, you actually are able to stay fuller longer eating less.
Right. Now, do you remember years ago they had what they called the combo diet, the combination diet, when you had mm-hmm. to pair things? This is not the same as that, right?
This is not. There's no exclusive food group that can't be combined with the other. There's only 3 macronutrients. We have protein, carbohydrate, and fat. All of our foods fit somewhere in that spectrum. Some of them are both. You know, cheese can be a protein and a fat. But there's no restriction. So this plan is really simple in the sense that you can eat the foods you love and still lose weight, but portion control is important, serving sizes are important, and then really looking at your food choices saying, well, how can I improve this? You know, you can eat, you know, you can have a donut, but you could also have a slice of whole grain toast. You know, you have the opportunity to choose and change.
Yeah, there's absolutely nothing that's off limits on your diet.
That's right.
Which I really like. It's about moderation and balance, and and just good common sense. So, you know, no excuse if we're traveling on the road there, right?
No excuse. You can go into any coffee shop. You can go into any fast food chain and find something that fits the 1-1-1 diet. Like I said, you can start at your next meal or snack. Just break it down. You know, simple example, if I can share with you a typical healthy breakfast that Americans are eating and, you know, may not be working for us. Oatmeal, whether it's high fiber, low sugar, steel-cut oats, or a cup of oatmeal, a glass of orange juice, and blueberries. Those are all three are carbohydrates. And so what I tell my clients to do is shift, pick the carb you want. So let's say you really want oatmeal. You need to take that carb and balance it out with a protein and a fat, and then you shift the other two carbs out, and you've got a well-balanced meal that's actually going to put your body into a better place and your energy, because all the carbs are great, but with the absence of protein and fat, actually your blood sugar will drop, and then you'll be hungrier sooner.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so we said like 6 to 8 ounces is a typical protein portion. What would be, I remember reading in the book, if you're out at a restaurant, you just envision like two handfuls of rice as being a portion of carb. Is that correct?
Yes. So another thing I tell my clients, like if it looks like too much food, it probably is. You know, you just want to use common sense. And if you're eating, let's say you select the rice at the dinner meal. Well, the first thing you do is skip the bread basket, and then you're going to pass on the glass of wine. But if you want the glass of wine, you have to modify your meal. So, yes, portions are important. Anywhere from 3 to 6 to 8 grams of ounces of protein is good. It just depends on your starting point, too. The portions are there to give you an up-to limit. So let's say it's 1 cup of rice is what we discuss in the book. You can eat up to 1 cup. A lot of people don't even eat a half a cup. But as long as that's your one carb, you're going to be okay.
Okay. So eating in restaurants, that becomes a lot easier when you understand this simple formula. And even fast food is not off limits as long as we, you know, forget if we're going to have protein and a bun, we've got our protein and our carbs, so we want to forget the fries.
That's exactly right. And we all know, you know, I had the fries, I feel so bad, I had the milkshake. Well, we already know that. But if you want the fries, then have a salad with chicken on it. If you want the milkshake, again, have a protein fat meal on the side and have that milkshake count as your carbohydrate. So you get the choice. Like I say, the choice is yours. It's just how you modify your meal to fit the formula.
Right. How often do you think we should eat? You talk about this in the book. You have a section on how often we should eat.
Yes. So I recommend 3 meals and 2 snacks a day for many reasons. One being that we typically get hungry between meals, so you might as well have a snack in place there. Another reason, which is even more valuable, is because it helps your metabolism keep working. Every time you eat, you stimulate your metabolism. Now, does that mean that eating junk all day is going to get you a higher metabolism? Not really, but if you eat the right kinds of foods, you're actually going to be giving your body what it needs at all points in the day, and you just run better. Your body just appreciates it.
Mm-hmm. You also recommend keeping a food diary, which, you know, I've tried in the past, and sometimes I'm really good at it, and sometimes I'm really bad at it. Give us some recommendations around that and why it helps us.
Yeah, I tell my clients that keeping a food log is really an opportunity to look at your patterns and your food choices. And what's important about that is you actually begin to see where the imbalance exists just by writing it down. And I also tell clients, as those working with me directly and in the book, don't count calories, don't count the grams. You don't need to tell me that information if you're coming. I already know what's in your food. Yes, awareness is important, but if we keep counting, and we're gaining, it's not really working. So what I ask people to do is to write down a description of their meal. So I had a serving of pasta and then a slice of sourdough bread and the pasta had chicken on it, I was really full. Like something like that where you can just say, okay, well, I had the pasta and the bread. Maybe next time I'll skip the bread. It becomes a conversation with yourself and with your nutritionist where you're able to say, oh, okay, I get it now. I know why I was so hungry at dinner. I skipped my snack. So it's this really great tool for awareness.
Right. There's a great story in Woman's World. You know, we get that little soundbite that better than lap band surgery. But there was actually, in the story, there was a client who was scheduled for lap band surgery. and she started your diet, as I understand it, the 111 plan, and started losing so much weight, they told her she might not be a candidate if she lost too much more. And you tell the rest of the story.
Exactly. So the woman that you're talking about, her name is Jane, and I actually had worked in a bariatric clinic for 2 years. And what I found with that population is that they were so confused and stuck, and they didn't even know how to go about losing weight in a normal way. They were on diet after diet. When I met Jane, she was also somebody who struggled with her weight. She wasn't extremely overweight, but she was looking to Lap-Band to be, you know, the answer. When we started working together, I pointed out some of these inconsistencies in her diet and shared with her how to put the 111 formula in place. And she lost 25 pounds in 8 weeks. She continued to lose weight. And yes, exactly right. The physician's assistant told her, if you lose any more weight, you're not going to be eligible for surgery. And she said, cancel. And she's living a healthy, wonderful life, free of any scars and very fit.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you also use this yourself when to lose 42 pounds after the birth of your son.
Yes, that's right. So I lost 42 pounds in 6 months, and then I jumped on the accelerated plan, which is also detailed in the book as a way to kind of fine-tune your 111 regular plan, and I've lost another 8 pounds since then. So, you know, 50 pounds is pretty significant, and I'm somebody who didn't have a weight problem, but after having a baby, you've got to get the weight off, and the 111 worked perfectly for me.
Yeah, and I like it because it's not really a diet per se. It's a way of living. It's a lifestyle. Because we all know we've been to, you know, I don't know, I'm not picking on anyone in particular, but Weight Watchers or Jenny Craig or something.
Right.
It works fantastic. And then you stop and gradually it starts coming back.
That's what happens. You know, I've been saying like all diets work, but until they stop working for you. So if you are somebody who can, deprive yourself of carbohydrates for 6 to 8 weeks, then what happens when you go on vacation or what happens when your child has a birthday party? Sometimes we just can't control ourselves. And that, even that moment, that 5 minutes where you indulge in something that you actually like, derails the last 2 months that you've done. And people often gain more weight back than the weight they've lost on any diet. So You want to be able to stick with something and feel good. Deprivation is depressing.
Right. Well, I want to share bust a couple of myths before we let you go today. And the first one, I know some people are going to be raising eyebrows with the carb word, is gluten is bad.
Yes. So I keep saying, you know, poor gluten. It's like this devil in our society now. And, you know, it's just being picked on. We did low fat and then we did, you know, low carb. And now we've got gluten in its own category, which is a carbohydrate. So, again, it's got that double whammy going against it. But, you know, gluten is a perfectly acceptable source of a starch or a grain or what have you. It's a protein found in wheat, and so there is a certain population who has celiac disease or gluten intolerance that should not be eating it. But if you're jumping on the gluten-free bandwagon to lose weight, you might want to reconsider doing that for a couple of reasons. One, if you stop eating it, your body might have more difficulty, you know, incorporating it or working with it once you bring it back into your diet. And the other one is because you're going to miss out on really healthy nutrients. Another key thing with the gluten-free trend is if you're eating a regular cookie and you go to a gluten-free cookie, there's no difference. I mean, it's the same calories, it's the same grams of fat, maybe even more fat and more sugar. So don't kid yourself by having a gluten-free diet filled with cookies and breads and what have you. The reason why people are losing weight on that type of diet is because they turn to more whole foods, which also has benefits, but it's, you know, to go gluten-free for the sake of weight loss, it may not work long-term.
Right. And I've got two more that I want to get in here. Meat is bad and dairy is really bad. That's myth number two. So talk to us about that.
So, you know, I respect anyone's eating practices, if you're vegetarian or vegan, absolutely for political reasons or personal health reasons. Absolutely, I respect you. What happens, though, in our society is we see somebody, a celebrity, who says, I went dairy-free or I became a vegetarian. And they see their body change and they look up to them and they say, I'm going to try that. There's nothing wrong with either food category. Meat has a lot of, contains iron and protein and other nutrients, and dairy as well comes with calcium and protein. It's a healthy food group. It's what we eat it with. So maybe a burger topped with onion rings and French fries and mayo and cheese may not be the best thing, but the burger in and of itself isn't so bad for you. And dairy, what's wrong with Greek yogurt or cottage cheese or a little ricotta? We have to become more balanced. We just love extremes, and it's not, and again, it's not working.
Mm-hmm. And you say in the book, the U.S. government has been in the business of deciding what Americans should eat, beginning decades ago with the infamous four food groups and then the food pyramid, and now it's Choose My Plate campaign. So myth number five, you say, is the U.S. government knows what you should eat.
I didn't expect you to pick this one, but yes. I mean, you know, I call myself America's eating strategist, and for one reason alone. Americans are confused, and they need a strategy. The U.S. government, you know, the rates of obesity in our country are skyrocketing, even in the youth population, and I think we need to take a step back and say, what's happening here between the lobbying and what have you? I'm not going to get too political, but if you look at the myplate.gov, you have doubles everywhere. You have a double grain, a double carb, a double protein, and no fat. It's just completely imbalanced. And I think if people were looking to that program for a healthy way of eating, it's a good guide, but it's not good enough for weight loss. It's just imbalanced.
Right. Well, I thank you. I'm going to try and say your name properly. Rania Patani.
You got it.
Okay.
Rania Patani, yep.
The 111 diet, the simple 111 formula for fast and sustained weight loss. One protein, one carb, one fat at every meal. Great common sense book that talks about a lot of other stuff that we haven't had chance to talk about in this segment. A final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Yes. I would love for everyone to realize that you can start this diet today. You don't need a funky food list. You don't need to wait till Monday. You can start this with your partner, your kids. It's a healthy way of eating, and you're going to get the results. The formula is as simple as it is effective.
Okay, very good. And listeners can find out more about Rania at her website, which is essentialnutritionforyou.com, essentialnutritionforyou.com, and the book again, The 111 Diet. And please do stay with us. We're going to take a very quick break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Nathaniel Smith. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations, both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Bothell Feed Center, we cover the world of animals. This week, February 16th, it's the third Sunday of the month, and that means it's a Kevin and Kim Sunday. Always entertaining, Kevin McDonald and Kim Miller Medium and Animal Intuitive host the show for me. No interviews this month, so they'll have open phone lines throughout the show, so Kim can help you connect with your animal or human loved ones on this side or the other. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Find out why Roberta Chinsky-Matchison is known as the talent maximizer and how her techniques can help identify great talent for your business and how to showcase your own unique talents. Join us every Monday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair right here on Alternative Talk 1150 AM and 98.9 HD Channel 3. See conversationslive.net for upcoming show details and podcasts.
Conversations Live is giving away books, from New York Times best-selling fiction to the latest from innovative thought leaders in business and psychology. To find out where, when, and how, like us on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and look out for posts titled Book Giveaway.
This is Alternative Talk 1150. Got it? Cool.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And my next guest is Nathaniel Smith. He's a licensed counselor who's assisted hundreds of clients with anger and domestic violence issues. He's worked with the Texas Department of Criminal Justice through a group program designed to rehabilitate offenders with deep-seated anger problems. And his book, Taming Your Temper, a workbook for individuals, couples, and groups, is available online and at other booksellers. Nathaniel Smith, welcome to the show today.
Thank you for having me on, Vicki.
Well, I'm glad you're here because I personally think things are getting crazy lately. I've never seen so many out-of-control people on the roads, in stores. It doesn't matter where you go lately. Somebody's flipping off somewhere. Are you finding that to be true yourself?
Exactly. I hate to admit this, but my business has grown exponentially over the last 5 years because of what you're talking about. And, Vicki, I think many things are driving it. I think in some cases it's economic pressure that people are feeling. I think it's different types of relationship pressures that people are experiencing because our society has changed as a whole. I mean, we have access to information like never before. We have pressures like never before, and I think that's creating people's, you know, anger responses, unfortunately.
Right. What was it about anger and domestic violence issues that interested you to enough to, you know, get this, build this career? You've been doing this a long time.
Mm-hmm. Actually, my father was a mental health professional, and that's what led me into this work. And then I had my own experience, Vicki, at 19 years old, while I was working on my undergrad. I was involved with someone, and I was out of control, Vicki. I was insecure. I was lost. I was aggressive. And I had someone that just pointed it out, a friend of mine, and said, listen, Nathaniel, you have got to do something about what's going on within yourself because your relationship, don't you see what's happening? It's out of control. And, Vicki, that was a wake-up call. Mm-hmm. I got into some counseling myself, and it's a good thing that I did, and it really changed my life. It helped me to see my own cycle, and then it just gave me such a burden to help others with this same problem because I didn't want them to end up where I was at one time. You know?
Right. I was doing a little research on the net and saw the British Association of Anger Management had done a fairly recent study. Mm-hmm. It said that 32% of those surveyed say they have a close friend or family member who has trouble controlling their anger. And more than one in 10 respondents say they themselves have trouble controlling their own anger. So let's just look at what we mean by anger. You know, I've heard conflicting stories on this. Some people say, some psychotherapists have said it's not an emotion, and others say, of course, it's an emotion.
Yeah, I say it's a normal human emotion that everybody has, Vicki. It's when anger is applied in the format of aggression, then it becomes a problem because people's rights are violated at that point. So we all have anger. Everybody feels anger at varying levels, right? It's the application of it is where it becomes an issue.
Right. And you start out the book with a chapter called Understanding Your Anger. You talk about core beliefs and the three elements that make up this. So I wonder if we could talk about the core beliefs.
Yeah, that's wonderful what you're addressing there. What I used to do in the past, Vicki, is I did a lot of what I call symptom management. People would come in, and I would teach them behavioral strategies to manage their anger. And what I found about the program was they were repeating. They were coming back. And it's because we were not addressing the driving force behind people's anger, and that's their core beliefs. And what core beliefs are is the way you perceive yourself internally in the external world around you. So let me give you an example. I had a CEO that came into my practice about 5 years ago, and he was just devastating everybody within the company with his anger. And his wife called me and she said, listen, Nathaniel, we've got to do something with Edward here. He's out of control. He's about to lose his job. And I got Edward in here. And what I found, Vicki, is he had these beliefs that I'm inadequate. I don't measure up. I'm inferior. And he was projecting that out on his staff. What I also discovered is he grew up in a home that promoted those belief systems, Vicki. Mm-hmm. His father was aggressive. He was emotionally abusive. He used to put him down all the time. And he learned these things, but that also shaped the way he perceived himself, internally and externally. So when he got in situations where he was triggered, he would present that belief, and he would just destroy other people on those premises.
Right, right. So we understand our core beliefs. We work to understand those. And then you talk about we need to define the rules we make for ourselves, both good and bad, because we can do it either way.
That's true, isn't it? Because these beliefs can create behavioral patterns, you know, that are healthy or unhealthy. So going back to our example with this gentleman I worked with, his rules were when he got angry or when he felt inadequate or he felt like he didn't measure up, he balanced the power in the room. So he would overassert himself, he would become aggressive, he would put others down to make himself feel better. So the rules are the behaviors that you build into these core belief systems.
Right. And then you say we need to become familiar with our automatic thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and automatic thoughts, what they are, is they're situation specific. We all have them. Like when, you know, as you and I are having this conversation today, people are listening in and they're having situational thoughts about what we're discussing. So we call those automatic thoughts. But if you have these belief systems, like I'm inadequate, I don't measure up, I'm ineffective, then when you get in the right situation, going back to our example again, he'd see someone in the room, they might be asking him just a general question, Vicki, and it just could be a question to understand. But for our example individual, the CEO, he would see it as, hey, you're saying I don't measure up. You're saying I'm inferior, and he would be having all of these types of conversations going on in his head, which would determine how he feels in that moment of time and his response, which is the critical thing. So in other words, we think, we feel, and then we behave, but we have these thoughts based on how we perceive ourselves internally in the external world around us.
Right, right. So this book is, obviously it's got theory in here, but it is an actual workbook, which mm-hmm. I think is a great way of doing this for, you know,
thank
somebody
you.
Can privately work through it themselves, or if
that's
they're
it.
Living with someone, you know, hopefully they'll buy it as a gift.
But, yeah.
But why did you choose to do it this way?
Well, what I've found is I practice what we call cognitive behavioral therapy, and what we're talking about, core beliefs, automatic thoughts, intermediate beliefs, those are all cognitive therapy principles. What made me do this, part of it is the theoretical model that I practice within. But secondly, what I found, Vicki, is people were coming into my practice, and they were telling me, Nathaniel, I am destroying people in my life, and I need tools. I need a way to manage my life. And then these exercises, Vicki, they grew out of these conversations. That's what's so beautiful about what's happened, you know, in this text. These are literal conversations and exercises that just happen through counseling with individuals and them asking me for resources.
Yeah. And, you know, I used to, you talk about the CEO, you were telling that story, and I worked mm-hmm. with a CEO in L.A. who had to have a handler follow him everywhere. He was so explosive and upset so many people. And
wow.
I was looking at your list of automatic thoughts here, all or nothing thinking, assumptions, mm-hmm. catastrophizing, overgeneralizing, labeling, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And mm-hmm. yes, I could check off every single one from his behavior there.
Yeah, I believe it. And it all starts with awareness, doesn't it, Vicki? If you're not aware of what's going on with your thinking patterns, then you can't change the way you feel and the way you respond. So that's the purpose of that section of the book, is to help people to understand how their thoughts drive these responses.
Yeah. And you have 36 strategies and exercises in, mm-hmm. in the book. Does it depend on circumstances where somebody begins to work through this, or should they start with chapter one?
I tell people start from the beginning, because the book is structured in a way that it builds on itself. I wrote the text where it would build on itself. So they really need to start in the beginning. I really encourage people not to just pull out the parts that they feel like are applicable.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they really want to conceptualize what's going on in their lives and they really want to change this, then it's going to take them starting from A and working it down to Z.
Right. And so let's look at some taming temper tips. The book is called Taming Your Temper. So let's look at some tips there.
Sure.
You talk about your anger cycle, Nathaniel,
mm-hmm.
And anger triggers.
Mm-hmm.
Just walk us through that quickly, if you would.
Yeah, not a problem. I think it starts off, like I said, with the core belief, right? And once you understand what's driving your anger, then it's really figuring out what types of behavioral patterns have you built in. And you need to conceptualize that. You know, in other words, what's your normal pattern when you become angry? And then another thing is, Vicki, what's going on biologically? That's a really critical piece. If you don't understand what's happening with your physiology when you get angry, then you're going to be less likely to be able to stop your cycle. And then it goes on up to dealing with the aftermath also. You know, guilt and shame will drive these cycles a lot too. So there are multiple levels that I require a person to try to conceptualize in order to understand their cycle. It's about awareness again. If you don't understand what's happening at all these levels, then you're not going to be able to stop it. Let me give you an example, Vicki. I had a client, his name was Max. He came in and he had life-threatening road rage. He'd get out on the road, he'd start shooting the finger, tooting his horn. One day, Vicki, he got so ticked off because this person didn't put on a blinker and they come over in his lane. He followed them into a parking lot at Target and assaulted them.
Mm.
And that's how he ended up in my practice. And what Max had to learn is what was going on with his biology. His heart rate was accelerating. He was having adrenaline surges. He had all of these correlations to the car. And before he even got in the car, he was even thinking about how frustrated he was going to be on the drive to work, et cetera. And what I taught him and through our work and through the exercises in taming your temper is how to pay attention to what's going on with his biology, so he could better learn to relax. So through muscle relaxation strategies, through deep breathing strategies, so he could break the correlation, Vicki, that he had with his anger and the automobile.
Right. Because I think we've all heard stories of people who say, oh, I don't know what happened. I just blacked out. I just saw red, whatever the mm-hmm. color is they see. And, you know, they've gone from 0 to 60 in a split second.
Sure.
Yeah.
And you know, I think some of that's conditioning, right? Some of it is people, like in Max's case, he'd gotten so used to becoming angry in the automobile, he no longer had thoughts. He no longer had feelings about it. It was just an immediate response, right? And I see people get trapped in that, and that's what was happening to Max.
Mm. What happens when if we're living with somebody who has an explosive temper? It can be very, you know, people handle it differently. My reaction has always been just to kind of try and come in underneath it and, you know, walk away. But that doesn't always work with people. It depends on who you're talking to. So
good point.
Give me some good tips for dealing with people who are very explosive.
I think the number one thing is to remain calm. That's the number one thing, because people that are explosive, a lot of times they will feed off of your energy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I would encourage people, if you're with someone like that, you want to remain calm. And then you want to, number two, you want to have a conversational tone when you start to address these things. And number three, it's important to be assertive. And assertive doesn't mean that you've got to take abuse, Vicki, and that you've got to continue to be in a situation like this where you're being treated unfairly.
Right.
So I think people that are involved in relationships like this, it's important to learn how to be assertive in a conversational tone and in a way that really helps the person to understand that they're violating your rights. So I tell people, once you get ready to become assertive, you want to attack the behavior and not the person. So eliminate any type of you statements, because that's going to come off as critical, and that's going to probably cause the person that's aggressive to become defensive. So just attack the behavior. So let me give you an example. It might be, hey, I feel hurt and disappointed when I'm spoken to in that manner. There was no you in that. And I owned it in terms of how I felt. I'm also letting the other person know what emotions it triggers for me. But the last thing that's critical is I'm attacking the behavior and not the person.
Right, right. Very key point there. I want to talk a little bit about, we're almost at the end of the segment. And since
sure.
our first two segments were on nutrition, you actually talk in the book about nutrition for anger prevention. So
mm-hmm.
what kind of things are we looking for there? Is it just good common sense eating well? You say, you're more likely to get into arguments after you've eaten junk food or skipped a meal.
Yeah, I think the gut is a very important thing. And you know, there's been a lot of statistical analysis on this particular point that I'm about to make. Your stomach produces more serotonin than even your brain.
Oh, I did
right?
not know that.
It's way up there in terms of the level of serotonin that's produced within the gut, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and we know that serotonin, which is one of the four neural transmitters that your neurons utilize to communicate, we know that when your serotonin levels are not flowing across the neurons the way they're supposed to, they're not building up between neurons the way they're supposed to, that this can cause emotional instability. That's why I put nutrition in here. Diet is really critical. And think about it, if you're eating, you're eating a lot of fatty foods and foods that don't really hit your protein levels like they need to be, and you're not hitting all of the levels of food like you're supposed to be, then it's going to make you feel worse. And then I found that I've had a lot of clients, Vicki, they didn't feel real good about their body and about themselves, and that really affected their abilities to manage their anger big time.
Yeah, I've seen that too. Well, Nathaniel Smith, this is a great book. Another thing you say is choose to focus on what makes you happy. Final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
The critical thing, Vicki, is your anger is manageable. And I want to let people know today, you got to save yourself from living a life of frustration and disappointment. Get help. This book you can do in the privacy of your home, Vicki, as you said earlier. And it is possible to stop this.
Yeah, perfect. And please tell listeners where they can find you online.
At TemperTamersProgram.com. TemperTamersProgram.com.
All right. And the book is called Taming Your Temper, a workbook for individuals, couples, and groups. This is some really powerful information in here. Thanks, Nathaniel Smith, for being with us today.
Thank you, Vicki. Have a great week.
And before we go today, I want to tell you very quickly that Hugo House has a special event tonight. You've probably heard of the New York Times Modern Love column if you're into love and live in the 21st century. And Daniel Jones, the editor, will read from his new book. It's called Love Illuminated. And he'll also present three Seattle authors who've published modern love columns. And that's over at Richard Hugo House in Seattle tonight at 7 p.m. I'm going, so hope to see you down there. And I want to thank you for being with us today. We'll be back next week with an all-new live show. You can find me at info@conversationslive.net or 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617, or on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair. And, of course, we're having a book giveaway on Facebook, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Thanks for being with us. Live well, live strong. Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.